Greetings, listeners, and welcome to another episode of Compare and Campaign. I am your host, Tom Lando, and with me, as always, is my co-host and co-GM,
McGill.
And today, oh man, I didn't write it down this time. It's episode 177, I think. And it's being recorded on the 17th of January, 2024. I mean, we're picking up off of the last episode. Last time we talked about the RPG Gozer, and McGill has brought that back so we can finish covering it. Meanwhile, I was telling the tale of Coyote's Aegis, and they are locked in a pretty wild kind of naval battle at the moment. But they just stroll aboard a boat known as the Bloody Fury. And I think that the Bloody Fury is now the last ship still on the waves, the last enemy ship still on the waves. But that is not to forget that the enemy has defensive rafts set up along the coast, one of which had a trebuchet mounted on it. I don't even know if that would physically work, a trebuchet on a raft, unless it had some sort of stabilizer.
It'd have to be a pretty big raft. Maybe a small trebuchet.
Yeah, or maybe it's some sort of stabilizing mechanism to it. But whatever the case, you've got a big sea. You've got the boats, the Navy can come in and they can blow away all the enemy boats. But then the enemy still has these like little platforms set up to deter them with. And so the players have just hijacked the Bloody Fury. And there was still a ship, the Iron Dawn, but one of the Draelic ships fired on the Iron Dawn, the remaining enemy ship. The damage was catastrophic, causing a massive explosion below decks, and so the Iron Dawn drifted toward the Bloody Fury, but then began to drift harmlessly past, sinking as it went. So basically, the players, they're on the Bloody Fury, and they've effectively won the first bit of the naval battle, but as the Iron Dawn goes down near them, in a desperate effort, the crewmen on board have abandoned ship, and the three on deck have begun climbing up the side of the Bloody Fury, including their captain. So the captain and two more crewmen have climbed up onto the deck of the Bloody Fury to face Connor, Gent, and Hex, and they've taken some hits as they came over, but as they climbed the side of the boat. But now they have climbed on board, and that's the situation. Is they hijacked the Bloody Fury, and now the captain of the Iron Dawn and his compatriots are going to try and take back the Bloody Fury from our heroes.
So it might be a moot point given the power level of your characters and the, potentially the magic items that they have. Because do they have jetpacks in this one?
They used it to get from one ship to another when they start going down.
What about spider climb boots? They have anything like that?
I don't think anybody had spider climb boots. I know that back in the day, Chessie used to have them.
The thing I was going to ask is, this is naval combat. It's on board ships. Do you or did you ever use that as like an environmental hazard that they had to contend with?
In what way?
Well, like whenever I have any kind of fight or extended period of time on taking place on a ship when there's like action going on, there's something that has to be dealt with, like a storm or something, I like to have my players roll, to see if they can stay upright during stormy seas, or if the deck is really slippery, maybe they have a disadvantage to certain checks to do with dexterity or things like that.
That stuff kicked in more for the brief period of time that they had their own boat. There was a maelstrom in the water ahead that dragged them in, and they had to break free of that. And then there was a volley of arrows that hit the deck, and they all had to sort of save versus that. So, I mean, to that extent, there has been some of that, but things are moving pretty quickly now. Like, they've barely stayed, like, they've barely been on the Bloody Fury for any length of time, it feels like. And
they're just moving ship to ship to ship.
Yeah, exactly.
RIP Frisky Dingo.
That's exactly it. So, do we want to just jump right into it?
Let's take the plunge, as it were.
So, the enemy captain fires blow darts at Connor from close range, having climbed aboard the deck. Connor takes one dart to the left ankle, then another to the upper chest for a total of 22 piercing damage. It's Gent's turn and attacks one of the crewmen that is adjacent to Connor, but they use their rapier of life-stealing, their vile rapier. They rush into combat and pin the defender in the left foot. The defender falls backwards overboard. Then Jank gets another turn, so they run up to captain and attempt to stab the captain, but he attempts to deflect the blow with his curved blade, but Jank manages to slip their own through right into his right arm. However, they don't have sneak attack, so it's just 8 damage, and then they disengage and move back. Connor takes another dart, this time to the lower left side for 12 piercing, and it's Hex, who comes moving down the stairs from the forecastle, the forecastle, while blasting the captain. First blast gets him square in the chest as he turns to face Hex. Second hits him in the jaw, then again in the sternum, shooting to kill. Connor is up and attacks with a javelin against the captain with a brutal stab to the gut. The enemy captain takes his blade, slashes Connor across the left arm for 10 slashing, followed by a slash to the head for 12 slashing. Gent runs up beside Connor and attacks the captain and impales the captain. As a bonus action, Gent searches the corpse for the shiny they saw earlier. And I say, which shiny is that? Meanwhile, Connor's armor protects him from 2 attacks to the left side, and then his cloak reactivates, his cloak of displacement, and Jed says, I was looking for the sword, and I pulled up a Chinese Dao sword. I said, yeah, it's just a slightly more exotic curved blade than the sabers and short swords and scimitars that the other guys have. Have you ever seen, you could look this up, it's a D-A-O, it's Chinese sword, it's on Wikipedia if you want to look it up. See these all the time in wushu movies, etc.
Oh yeah, they have that little flange at the end of the blade.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Hex charges in and gets a nat 20 for 53 damage. Jet takes the blade. Hex gets the remaining crewman in the head. He seems to still be barely alive. And so Hex blasts the guy overboard. Everyone gets 350 XP, and bringing their new total to 339,675. And now, against all odds, they have the Bloody Fury completely undamaged, and nothing left to keep them from the platforms that make up the enemy defensive grid. The Draelic fleet is free to open fire on the surrounding enemy ships, keeping this area of advance clear for your approach. Gent says, you know what this means, Hex? You can be the chef on a cruise ship. And Hex says, I have an idea for a bar inside a pool on top of a boat. And they say, okay, what's next? And Hex says, well, we need to capture 4 humans on the rafts. Think you could bring us in nice and slow? You had some luck with the piloting earlier. And Gent says, what I would do for a 3-cornered hat right now. I say, the nearest...
I was totally going to say, like, kick in the Pirates of the Caribbean theme music as soon as they take over the ship.
The nearest raft is the black one, which appears to be the one that does not have a human traitor on it. It is covered in bones, and on it stands a minotaur skeleton with a hulking blade, in addition to the 4 recruits who previously operated the trebuchet. The party may also use actions to fire the ballista at targets on the platforms. They would need to load, aim, and fire 1 act each shot, but you have 3 shots remaining on hand and likely more below decks from what Gent discovered. Gent says, ooh, all right, let's do that. And Hex says, yeah, if we all help, we can shoot off the remaining three rounds pretty quick at least. Who's our gunner? Actually, why don't you take the shots, Jen? I got to step away for like 2 minutes. That's out of character. And I say, oh, could you make performance rolls before you go? And, of course, the thing I keep forgetting to do is the thing from the original module where it's like a gladiatorial battle, and so you're winning over the crowd. You do little performance checks, and if you succeed, you get advantage on your next roll. Rolling all together, Gent has advantage on this shot and targets the Minotaur skeleton. They lodge a massive flaming bolt in the Minotaur skeleton's ribcage that remains blazing there as the creature stands, so the horror of the recruitment's on the raft. Everyone makes performance checks again. As you deftly work together to continue firing the ballista, you're surprised to hear someone coming aboard over the side. Initially startled, you realize that the slaves you liberated have chosen to return to the vessel and aid you. A drone offers the foldable boat back to Connor, while the others hurry below decks. It isn't long before another shot is added to your stockpile next to the ballista, with more on their way. Gent gets to make another shot. Gent does a little heart emoticon for the slaves that helped.
Was that a decision on your part? Is that in the module, or did you decide to do that so that the players would have a crew for their new ship?
I just kind of made it up.
Fair enough.
I don't think it's it's in the module, but I think, I don't know, maybe I wanted to give them more ballista shots or something like that. I'm honestly not sure. I made it up, as you do as a DM from time to time. So, Gent hits the Minotaur skeleton again, but still it stands. I have everyone roll perception as they approach the black raft covered in bones, with advantage from Trioptics. Hex and Connor watch the movement on the raft as the ship drifts closer. Among the scrambling enemy recruits, they realize that skeletons are pulling themselves together out of the pile of bones on the raft. Together, they count 9 of them, still laying low. So there's a raft covered in bones with a trebuchet, but the bones are beginning to animate into skeletons. Finally, with a third shot, the Minotaur skeleton explodes into a burst of bone shards and flaming timber. Jen says, thank goodness. The slaves cheer as the Minotaur skeleton explodes. Everyone gets advantage on their next roll, and now there are 4 enemy recruits and 9 skeletons on the black raft at this point. They can be targeted individually if the players wish. Alternatively, they can attempt to board the raft or allow the enemies on the raft to attempt to board the Bloody Fury as they continue past this raft. And, so, at this point, the boat has drifted towards the black raft, but Gent votes that they shoot and take out as many as they can. Alex says, sounds good to me. Connor and Hex will help with the loading. So at this point, they're just sort of like headed towards this raft, and it's just like load, fire, with the ballista like over and over again. So they've got 10 shots. Gent targets a skeleton. One skeleton blows up. Next shot, Gent aims at a recruit. One recruit is picked right off the raft. Next, they target a skeleton, and this time they get nat 20. 2 skeletons and a recruit are all slain in one fiery bolt of death. They take the next shot. A recruit toward the back of the raft is totally obliterated. There's only 1 recruit left and 6 skeletons. They take a shot. The last recruit falls blazing into the pile of bones beneath him. 6 skeletons remain, with 5 ballista shots remaining. They destroy one of the skeletons hiding amongst the bones, realizing that there are braziers on the raft that they might be able to knock into the skeletons if they place their shots right. This time, they aim for a brazier, and they get a nat 20. The brazier is sent clattering across the raft, leaving a trail of blazing oil across the bones. Two of the skeletons are currently on fire. They take another shot, aiming for a brazier. The one manages to splash some burning oil onto one of the skeletons, but unfortunately isn't well-placed enough to do a lot of damage like the last one. They have three more shots, one brazier and five skeletons. They aim for the brazier and get another nat 20. The last brazier just explodes, destroying all the skeletons but one in the fireball it creates. They take aim and get another nat 20! Just destroying the last skeleton. For clearing the black raft, they each gain 500 gold and 800 XP. The last skeleton is torn apart by their direct shot, and they have one shot left over. At that point, I said their new XP total was 340,375, and Jin has a new gold total of 21,454 because they made back what they gave the slaves. So, there are four rafts to take on now, each with a human trader leading the forces on board. I've named these the Iron, Bloody, Tower, and Caged rafts. The Iron One has 16 soldiers on it, one of them being the traitor. There are ramshackle fortifications on it, as well as fire pots that could be used as thrown explosives in a pinch. The Bloody One is the one with a big furnace and a single human accompanied by big suits of armor, much of the raft obscured by smoke. The Tower One has a tower, and at the base of it is the traitor Sheena riding a giant scorpion. She's accompanied by five recruits. And finally, the Cage One, named for a cage with a suit of armor inside, has 10 soldiers on board, one being the traitor you seek. And Jet says, named for Nick Cage. I ask, because we were about to break at this point, I said, before we break, do you want to select a target for the next ballista shot / which raft you want to head for first? And Alex says, it seems to be captained by a bad lieutenant. And he says, let's turn this ironclad around and head for the iron raft. And they say, okay, good. And I say, you don't have to turn around, they're all ahead. Alex says, oh, perfect. Maybe save the last ballista shot for the Scorpion Queen. So you can make the shot now. Could also target a fire pot, potentially hurting enemy ranged units on the fortifications on the iron raft. And Gent says, okay, let's shoot for the scorpion. And so they fire. They lodge their last flaming ballista shot in the hide of the mighty scorpion, causing its rider to scream with fury. Everyone gets, I had forgotten that everyone gets plus 50 gold after searching the guys that climbed on board the ship with their captain. So we add that now. And then that was the end of this session, but we closed with them closing in on the iron raft.
This is a big battle.
Oh man, it's only the beginning. So, they go in for a stealth landing on the iron raft using the right piloting. As they make their approach into the enemy defense grid aboard the commandeered enemy ship, the Bloody Fury, they have time to prepare themselves before heading toward the next raft. This allows them to receive the benefits of a short rest for free should they need them. Assuming they return to the Bloody Fury after they secure each raft, they'll have the benefit each time, though the use of emergency supplies on board the ship, through the use of emergency supplies on board the ship and the aid of the crew handling the ships for them. The iron raft is a ramshackle iron fort surrounded by dark, murky water with unstable gantries that cling to a central tower where greasy smoke rises from a dozen fire pots. The party spots 16 enemy soldiers on the raft. One of these appears to be wearing armor of a better quality than the others, suggesting that he is one of the traitors that they were instructed to bring in alive. Connor and Hex reload their firearms. And Hex says, I guess, or Alex says, I guess Hex can't really cook anything on the boat, eh? I say, you could have prepared something ahead of time. He says, I don't have any food in my inventory. And I say, you know, you knew you were going into battle. He says, okay. Hex passes around a bunch of cucumber sandwiches with the crust cut off in little wax paper bundles.
Oh, how nice.
When approaching the Iron Raft, they are afforded an opportunity by the chaos of the battle. Soldiers on the platform are so preoccupied that they may be able to lay low as they drift through the smoke, then catch the defenders by surprise as they leap aboard. In order to do so, each character will need to make a stealth check. Due to their exceptional performance during the naval approach and the aid of the liberated slaves manning their ship, everyone has advantage on this roll. So Chantel gets, or Gent gets a 34, Hex gets a 24, and Connor gets a 12. Each crouches down, staying close to the side of the deck as they allow the ship to glide in its course toward the enemy. As the ship drifts past the defensive platform, must each make an acrobatics check or a dexterity check with proficiency if you have proficiency in athletics. Everyone has advantage invigorated by your success in destroying the enemy's fleet on your way in. Hex gets a nat 20, Connor gets another 12, Chantel gets a 20, or Jake gets a 29. So they each successfully leap from the deck onto the raft. Connor is a little less graceful than the rest of them, but everyone is able to help him lay low and then give him a hand when it comes time to cross over. So they have the element of surprise ducking down behind the fort's gantries on the east side toward the back. Hex receives a sending from Abu once they're near the raft. Is the capture target on the raft or up on the fortifications? He's on the raft, Hex says. Confirmed. We're going to light up the fort. Within seconds, a salvo from the Draelic fleet behind rattles the upper fortifications on the raft. The fire pots explode, casting flames down onto one of the recruits on the west side of the platform under the fort, while the shooters atop the construction are totally blown away. Suddenly, the water around the raft goes up in flames. Apparently, the murky water surrounding it was filled with oil. Gent says, damn. Hex says, does our boat look okay? Say, everyone must make a dex saving throw due to one of the fire pots exploding on the gantry overhead. Oh yeah, it's fine. It was to the side of the line of fire. Hex and Jink get nat 20s. Connor gets a 6. Not Connor's day. Hex and Connor both take 4 fire damage, Hex from saving Connor from his armor, while Gent takes none. The contents of the fire pot rain down, but everyone quickly gets out of the way. The remaining enemies on the raft are momentarily stunned. Everyone rolls initiative. Gent gets a 24 on initiative, Hex gets an 8, Connor gets a 20. Alex says, oh, how the turntables. So, everyone has surprise as Gent goes first. Gent aims their bow at one of the crewmen that's been dazed by the explosion. The raft is surrounded by a ring of fire. Gent puts a shadow bolt right through the recruit's eye, killing him instantly. Connor is next and peers through the wreckage and casts Hold Person on the traitor. But he saves. Empok bastards! I'll slaughter every one of them! He cries out, trying to alert his dazed comrades to the Empok's presence. For Gent Part 2, they aim for the traitor, and they say, I aim for the one Connor tried to hold, and I say, keep in mind, you need that guy alive. She says, oh, right. Ha! Not him. I will attempt to kill the guy who's near him. And so they stick a bolt in the recruit's right shoulder. Hex dashes between the smoking holes on the deck and starts blasting with his Apollo. He starts with the recruit closest to Connor, the one that Gent just hit, blasts them in the right leg, but they remain up barely. Their next shot hits, blasting the recruit in the left eye, killing him. He then fires on another recruit who he can see is already burned from the fire pots exploding above him earlier, and he clutches his left shoulder. Then Hex, as his bonus action, rages, blasts him in the left arm as he's nursing the burn, and the spirits of Hex's fallen neighbors from another life rise up from the raft and circle around him. Gent fires on the one that Hex hit. The recruit winces and falls to one knee as Gent skewers his left leg, shish kebab style. Connor tries to hold Person, the boss man, again, and once again he saves. Come on! He points his blade out. I'll gut you like a pig! You thought these flames would protect you? You have surrounded yourself with Paylor's light, Connor shouts back. Connor moves up. And the recruits use their blow darts to open fire on Connor. Initially, it seems that Connor is caught in a hail of darts, but in a single shimmer of his cloak of displacement, he is revealed to be untouched. The leader roars, charging at Connor with his blade drawn. He takes two swipes at Connor's left leg, and while the first just barely misses, the second cuts into Connor's thigh. Connor takes 16 slashing damage. Hex continues shooting the burnt recruit. A blast to the right shoulder puts the recruit on their back. Firing to another one, he grazes the side of another recruit's head and then gets him in the right thigh. He's bleeding heavily, hits him again with an offhand shot, blows his left hand off, and he falls over dead. And Hex moves over to two more of the recruits. Gent, meanwhile, is back with Connor, who has been attacked by the traitor. And Gent fires on one of the ones that Hex is in combat with, piercing the recruit's right knee. The recruit stumbles forward, striking his head on the iron raft and dying instantly. Then, with the traitor, Connor gives the guy a face full of buckshot, mix of piercing and radiant 32 damage. The target flails at Connor, forcing him to adjust his aim at the last minute, but Connor manages to blast him in the left knee, provoking a howl of pain. Connor then casts Spirit Weapon at level 4 and bonks the target as well with his Spirit Shovel. The shovel swipes into the enemy's right leg, and the recruits on the other side of the raft move up, firing blow darts at Connor as they go. Meanwhile, the one engaged by Hex fights back with their scimitar. One of the darts plink off Connor's right pauldron, but the next lands just beneath it, sticking into his right arm. Connor takes 14 pierce. Hex easily sidesteps the strike of the recruit in front of him. Taking advantage of Connor's distraction, the leader of the raft hacks into his left shoulder, followed by a strike which cuts across his chest. Connor takes a total of 23 damage. Hex is up. Hex blasts the guy in front of him. The shot barely misses the target's face. Hex ends up giving this dude a laser haircut. He grips his arm where Hex shot him, then stumbles backwards off the raft into the flames. Then Hex moves up to the last two recruits while the traitor is still engaged with Connor. Hex goes for the bite, but he gets a nat one. For Gent's turn, Gent fires on one of the recruits, but also gets a nat one. The bolt disappears into the fire beyond the edge of the raft. For Connor's turn, he drops his shotgun and pulls out the javelin, then tries to attack non-lethally, smacking the guy. Connor twirls the javelin to its blunt end mid-strike, shoving it into the captain's chest just below his right shoulder. You hear a crack and the captain coughs up blood. Then for a non-lethal shovel strike, the shovel comes around and pitches into the captain's sternum, winding him further. The scimitars of the two recruits graze harmlessly off of Hex's scaly hide, Hex shrugging off one blow and kicking the other aside. Desperate, the captain of the raft continues to strike at Connor. First, he plants his blade in Connor's left foot for 9 slashing damage. Then he cuts deeply across Connor's chest with a critical hit, dealing 18 slashing damage. Hex blasts one of the recruits. The recruit screams after Hex blasts his nose off his face. Hex blasts the recruit in the right ankle as blood pours from his face. Then Hex executes the recruit with a final shot to the chest. And then does a bite to the last guy with a nat 20 that triggers devastating criticals. So it's a big bite. He wasn't, the recruit wasn't expecting you to sink down and bite into his left leg. Predator instinct. 34 piercing, Hex chomps into the recruit's femoral artery and drinks a lethal amount of blood almost immediately.
I was going to say, anyone who knows Hex, though, was instantly expecting a bite.
Only the captain remains. Gent attempts to get the traitor in a chokehold. What do I roll to attempt to grapple? And I say, it would be an athletics check, but keep in mind, grapple only reduces their speed to zero. You may want to just go with the straight-up melee attack for a chokehold, treating the damage as non-lethal. They say, okay, I'll do that. They take out their rapier of life-stealing and attempt to non-lethal hit. We've got a fun reference coming up. They hit. They do 15 quote-unquote pierce and 34 sneak. I say, Jen quickly rushes behind the target and throws her right arm out, gripping the rapier. The enemy tries to pull his face away from its tip. Jen instead closes their arm around the traitor's neck and pulls them down into a chokehold that leaves them unconscious. Queller attack! Everyone gains 1250 XP. New total 341,725. Hey. For those who don't know, Queller attack is a sick metal band and their name means chokehold or stranglehold or, you know, in Norwegian.
I didn't learn that until recently. All thanks to you, Tom.
Yeah. So they've secured the iron raft. Also, Jet notices something shiny on the captive's fingers. It's a set of silvered knuckle dusters engraved like a bull's head and inlaid with gems. And Jen says, oh, I feel like that would be... Jen initially, when they heard shiny, just said, mine. But then they hear what it is and they say, I feel like that would be helpful for somebody who fights with their fists. I won't risk breaking a nail. And Alex says, well, let's show it to the armory guys and see what they say, because I have a sneaking suspicion. The raft is now clear, little more than an iron platform covered in smoking debris surrounded by a ring of fire. They have their first captive incapacitated. The Bloody Fury floats adjacent the raft while the Draelic ships are not far behind. And Alex is like, well, let's tie this guy up, stuff him somewhere safe below the decks on the Bloody Fury. Jen says, sounds like a good plan. Says, on to the next raft then, I suppose. And so there's the plan to tie the captive up, jetpack back to the Bloody Fury, then proceed. And Jen says, I think Jen has enough different bindings to use. They will empty their pockets to find what works. Say, there are also ropes aboard the Bloody Fury, which you could use once you transport the prisoner there, since he'll be unconscious while you bring him over. Given the ring of fire, I sort of assume you guys use the jetpacks to get back to the Bloody Fury. And Alex says, definitely. Connor doesn't want to swim through that. So, back on the ship... Their crew of liberated slaves helps to restrain their captive and keep an eye on them. Once again, the crew is able to take care of the majority of the ship's functions while the rest of them take the opportunity to patch themselves up. As such, they may receive the benefit of a short rest for free again. Connor spends some hit dice. Gent says, I adopt them all, presumably in regards to the liberated slaves. The Bloody Raft is surrounded by choking fumes. Black smoke belches from a giant forge, wreathing this raft in an oily cloud. Suits of armor clank between ironclad towers, attended by a hulking man wearing a suit and blood-covered apron over his fine body armor. Everything on this raft is bloody, spattered with crimson spray, from the platform to the towers to the suits of armor. The thick smoke drifting from the bloody raft provides cover that a skilled pilot could potentially slip through to land out of sight. Whoever did the honors would have advantage, as the security of the defensive grid is now failing as you dismantle it piece by piece. Connor casts guidance on Hex, tries to bring us in close, and then he says, or wait, didn't we find out that Jen is slightly better at this? Jen says, I think so. And I say, yeah. So Connor casts guidance on Jen. Jen rolls a 12. Unfortunately, the Bloody Fury's armored bulk shudders into a place as it brushes up against the edge of the raft. The vibrations traveling through the raft alert each of the suits of armor to their presence as they all turn to face the ship. Everyone rolls perception with advantage. Hex and Gent are able to spot the captain of this raft nearby. He's the only one not clad in heavy armor, it seems. notice that the captain seems to be controlling the suits of armor with some kind of device that looks like a key. He speaks into it as the suits of armor turn to face the group. Everyone may re-roll Arcana with advantage. Hex and Gent are able to tell there's more than magic at work here. The suits of armor appear to have complex mechanical backplates. They surmise that the key must be inserted into one of these backplates in order for the suits of armor to obey its wielder. Basically, they could hijack these suits of armor if they seized the key from the leader. They would need to successfully unlock them in order to do so. Jen says, time for deft hands. So on this raft, there are areas of smoke that have the lightly obscured effect. This would mean disadvantage on perception checks, but with trioptics, just means regular checks without advantage. Everyone rolls initiative, and shock and awe, they all have advantage on their next roll. Gent is up first. Gent ducks into one of the towers that a suit of armor is positioned in, quickly darting behind it, then use their bonus actions to fast hands him. And I say, in order to hack the backplate, you'll need to first succeed on a grapple check. They say, oh, fuck. And I say, which we do athletics. And they get a nat 20 for 26. And then they have advantage on thieves' tools to hack the backplate. Normally hacking is an action, but I'll let them do it with their fast hands. Jen gets...
Lots of nat 20s around.
Yeah, Jen gets a 34. Jen successfully hotwires the animate armor. Will now obey Jen's commands. This will probably be the whole of Jen's turn. Act to grapple, bonus act to hack. But you may also issue your order now before we move on. Or if you had anything else to do, like a move. And they say, an order? Okay, I will order it to protect me. I say, if that's all, Connor is up next. It says, that's my turn. Connor moves over the ship, homing in on the target, and gives him a jab. The traitor parries Connor's attack with his blade. You'll burn for that one, the traitor growls. Then Connor summons another level 4 spirit weapon, hits the traitor. The shovel smacks the traitor across the head, then Hex is up. Hex moves up to try and get an angle on one of the animated armors. The structure with the furnace in the middle is 10 feet tall, but he can see through the smoke and he can peek around the corner. So basically there's some trouble getting sight lines on this raft because there's all these like fortifications and clouds of smoke and there's this big furnace at the in the middle of it. Hex targets one of the guys that he can't spot, hits him with advantage from shock and awe. First blast catches the suit of armor center mass. There was a mistake I made there basically, where I had the traitor parry Connor's blade or Connor's javelin. But then we realized that Connor should have had advantage, so I let him re-roll. So actually, Connor stabs the boss in the right hip, and then, oh man, this one's kind of a mess. Okay, another center mass shot on the armor, on the animate armor. And then instead of doing an offhand attack, Hex draws and lights the scimitar instead. The enemy champion spins, striking Connor with his blade twice. The first attack lands for 7 slashing, disabling Connor's cloak effect immediately. Then Connor deflects the second attack with his shield. Then it's back to Gent. Gent takes out their rapier of life-stealing and move up beside Connor's spiritual weapon, tries to stab the traitor. They have advantage, but he parries that attack with his fancy Dao blade. Gent's quote-unquote armor moves to stand in front of her, guarding against enemy attackers. The enemy suits of armor move up. Most of them are so slow that they only do that this turn. They crowd and clank around the party, vying for the opportunity to strike. The one Hex was shooting manages to close the distance to him, kicking Hex in the right ankle while Hex dodges to the left. Hex takes 16 blunt damage. Another suit of armor brings its fist down on Connor from a slightly raised position on a flight of steps in front of him. For a nat 20, another 16 bludgeoning, this time to Connor. Finally, one of the suits punches the friendly suit of armor twice. One strike bounces harmlessly off its left arm, but the other leaves a dent by striking the same spot. Gent says, "Oh no, Rusty!" Thankfully, in response, Gent's suit of armor does much better, delivering a blow identical to the one it received, followed by a classic rock'em sock'em to the jaw plate. This is where I broke for that session. I said, to clarify, I was explaining about the advantage that they have on their rolls from shock and awe. Gent says, excited to get a mech army. And I say, to clarify, the shock and awe effect corresponds to how many enemies you kill, how many crits you roll, and how many performance checks you succeed on. The general idea being that as you perform better in the field, you inspire your comrades elsewhere, enabling them to aid them and aid you in turn, generally keeping you guys in good fighting spirits. And Jed says, that's a cool mechanic. Thanks for the fun night. I say, it's a bit much for me to keep track of, I'm finding, but I'm doing my best. Do we keep going from here?
Well, what do you think, Tom? We can always bounce back and forth. We can talk about some topics from Gozer and then check back in if you want, or we could just do all Gozer all the time.
I don't know. I feel like the next session is just cleaning up this raft.
Well, then why don't we cover it? That can't possibly take that long, right?
It's pretty long.
I guess there is a lot to clean up.
Yeah, there's a lot of armor on that raft. What did I say? Like 16 of them? I don't think that's right. Yeah, it's more like eight clanking armors and one traitor. Well. Oh, funny enough, on the next session, it starts with Gent saying, yo, and then I say, oh shit, I forgot what day it is. Ha, yeah, let's do this. Good thing I was good to go regardless. And Alex says, lol, hey guys, let's capture some human supremacist scum. And Gent says, Gent's robot army goals. I say, yes, we left on the bloody raft featuring the suits of armor with the back plates. It's Gent's turn. Yeah, do we just want to keep going?
Sure. I do want to say, though, I find it extremely funny that you, of all people, would forget a day when there was a role-playing game going
on. As if, right? Yeah.
I know. It's completely out of character. It's
crazy.
Yeah, we might as well keep going.
So, in Gent's current position, I say it should be said your current position, like Gent's basically doing a bunch of debating about how to move. And I say it should be said your current position gives you a good opportunity to hit the capture target with a non-lethal sneak attack. And Gent says, not going to lie, personal achievement was going to recruit all robots first, but we'll do that instead. Just my sword stats? I say, yeah, just any melee attack. Don't forget you have advantage. Get a big hit. Gent leaps at the traitor, pinning him in the right shoulder before trying to drag him down, their talons covering his mouth. However, the enemy still struggles and breaks free before Gent can subdue him. Connor, also in prime position to knock out this traitor. Connor tries to punt him with the blunt end of the javelin. Connor whacks him in the head and knocks him out cold. So at the very least, they manage to take out the traitor pretty quickly. It's just that they have these like swarming robots on their raft with them that they have to deal with. So Spirit Shovel attacks a bot, but with a 17, no dice. Connor moves a square. The shovel bounces off the armor's back. Hex swaps the scimitar into his main hand and offhands the Apollo, then attacks the adjacent bot. Hex runs the suit of armor through. He then moves up and attacks another one, striking the robot across its right shoulder, then striking it in the right hip, finally fires in the left shoulder. Then it's armor time. Rusty delivers a kick to his opponent, though his left hand punch seems ineffective. Rusty takes a hit to the chest. Connor's cloak of displacement saves him from a beating. Excuse me, I got bad hiccups today. I don't know if I'm going to be able to do the rest of the episode like this. Because now they're really coming through. Do we want to take a break and I'll come back to this? So, I feel like my side of the podcast has gotten derailed by hiccups.
Should we pop over to the danger room then? Maybe being scared in the danger room will cure your hiccups.
Maybe. Where I left off, we just have a robot battle on a raft. It's going to happen for a little while, and we'll get back to it next time.
Robots on a raft.
They've knocked out the traitor, though, and that's their real objective.
So wait, the robots are on rafts? They're not in rowboats? They're not robots in rowboats?
No.
Disappointing, Tom. I'm disappointed.
You'll just have to be disappointed, then.
Let's talk Gozer some more.
Like this game.
And, last time we did a bunch of character creation, the main thrust of all of it being that you can just use tables for everything. Gozer is a game built out of randomized rolling tables, tables to roll on for everything from your hit points to what shape your ears are. And we rolled you up a character. And so this time around, I thought I'd take a look at just the rules, how the game is actually played. And this is one of the few sections, the general rules section, where it's not a bunch of tables. Like, the vast, vast majority of this source book is all random tables. But this is the one part where it's not. And we'll actually, there are still a few mixed in here. But the overview for this is that it is a lot like D&D. Maybe like a really boiled down and simplified version of D&D. To do most actions, you roll a d20 and you want to meet or do better than your AC, your action class. And your action class, there are three: cunning, magic, and prowess, and they are essentially your attributes. You don't have any skills or anything like that. You just gotta roll against your action class, whatever the appropriate one is. You want to roll high because as I mentioned, when we were assigning numbers to your action classes, lower is better. So the lower your action class, the more likely you are to succeed, and you want to roll high. And the outcomes are very simple here. If you roll your action class or better, you succeed. You hit. If you roll 5 or more above your AC number, you get what's called a solid hit, where you can apply some special effects from like your equipment or whatnot. If you roll a nat 20, of course, it is a critical hit, and you describe the special effect that occurs as a result of your crit. If you roll less than your AC, it's a miss. If you roll 1 under your AC, you still miss, but you graze. You do 1 damage, not unlike Malagast. And then if you...
Yeah, it's funny that graze means the same
thing. Yeah, and then if you roll a nat 1, it's a fumble. It's a critical fail, basically. You describe how you screwed up. There's some stuff here about range and durations, but it's all pretty straightforward. It's just terms, right? Like close means you're within striking distance, nearby means within throwing distance, et cetera, et cetera. Some rules here on sleep. If you rest, you sleep and you heal 2d6 plus 1 HP per sleep. Pretty easy. And there's rules for a short rest as well. Again, like just sort of like the boiled down version of D&D. Some key differences, though, between Gozer and D&D are the two additional, like, number pools that your character gets, luck and goos. If it's a lucky roll, you get plus two on the roll, and you can stack it. You can add plus one per extra luck. And then if a roll is unlucky for whatever reason, you get a minus two, or worse, it also stacks. So it's just one of those plus two or minus two rules. Reminds me actually of when I was first learning D&D and I was reading like tips for DMs. And one of the tips was, you have a difficulty class written down. And if you want to make it harder, you just add two. Or you want to make it easier, minus two. So plus two, minus two was sort of a general rule for increasing or decreasing difficulty. So again, a little like similarity to D&D there. And then goos is the other pool that you can spend your goos points. Everybody gets five at the start to just do something amazing. And there's a list of the six things you can do with goos. And you can do this anytime you want. You spend one point of goos to do any one of these things. Pull off a cool stunt. Steal the initiative. You can grab the turn order by spending goos. Succeed at one die roll. It's an automatic success. You can know one fact from the GM. I thought this was pretty fun. There's a bunch of examples of like facts that you could learn. Like there's a dagger in my boot, or their shoes untied, or the wizard is afraid of snakes, or I know the captain. So you can spend a goose and it'll just give you some GM knowledge. You can spend one goose to get an extra action. And you can spend one goose to add one new fact to the game story. And I thought that was pretty fun. The idea that you can spend your special points to actually sort of participate in the narration. Because unlike the fiction forward games we've talked about, like Wicked Ones, this is another like GM and player dynamic game like D&D, where the GM pretty much dictates the majority of the story. But hey, Gozer has this additional rule. You can spend a point to add in something of your own. I mentioned actions. This is another difference from D&D. On your turn, you can do one thing. You can take an action or you can move. Though you can also do a trivial thing. And a trivial thing is... normally I'd say it's a free action, but I feel like there are some things here that might count as like an actual action D&D or just like a partial action. Like saying your catchphrase, of course, that's a trivial thing. But like throwing a sandwich, that might actually be more of an action depending on the context. But yeah, in Gozer, you can do your one thing, which is take an action or move. And then you can do one random trivial thing. You can regret your past choices. That is an option here. Initiative is just determined by someone rolling 1d6. So if you roll 1 to 3, the enemies go first. If you roll 4 to 6, the PCs go first. The round is over when everyone's had a turn. And that's it. That's the extent of initiative order. All the enemies go, all the PCs go. Back and forth. Just looking here, other notable things. All damage explodes, which I thought is a nice touch. If you roll the max on the die, you roll again, you add it up. It can just keep on exploding and stacking. Obviously, when you deal damage, you subtract the defense of your target. You add any bonuses from your weapon. That's sort of the combined roll. Like you want to attack, you roll d20 against your prowess to attack or defend, and then the damage is the action roll minus the action class plus weapon damage minus target's defense, and you do a minimum 1 HP damage on a hit. Enemies die if they lose all HP, but if you lose all HP, you don't have to die. You can suffer debasement, which we talked about last time as well. But just to recap that, debasement is like, to use D&D terms, it would be like being at 0 hit points, but not dead. It would be like, you know, the time when you might start doing death saves. Instead, in Gozer, you're knocked down, you're knocked out, you're suffering permanent damages, and the options are things like you get a nasty scar, you get ravage, you get plus one magic AC, you get bruise, you get plus one prowess AC, rattled, plus one cunning AC, you get your innards squished for minus 1d6 HP, or you're cursed and you lose a gooze, minus one gooze. There's even a random table here for what happens if you choose death. You make a new gooze and you pick a boon. You get to roll on this table, and maybe you get something cool on your next character.
I wonder what happens if I roll cursed, but I've already used up all my gooze.
Well, that's a good question. I think that's for the gooze master to decide. If it were me and you had no gooze and you rolled curse, I might make you like suffer an unlucky roll. Next roll's unlucky.
Oh man, I was thinking you might just
kill you. I mean, that's also an option, but I am a merciful gooze master. There are some other just general things like morale. Enemies may run away if they're losing. The GM rolls a d12, and on an 8 to a 12, they flee. However, much like in D&D, undead, golems, robots, constructs, they don't have a morale check. They don't run unless they have like actual reasons, not just that they're scared. And then we get into just more extensive tables. Like, I think you and I did armor last time, right? Yeah, yes. We talked about armor. You rolled up some fancy armor. Here's a D20 table on nasty scars you can get. It just tells you all the different spots that you could have a nasty scar. Here are some special effects. You know, I mentioned special effects can come into play depending on context. And special effects can be like invisibility once per day. Or you have one ability related to your belt buckle symbol. Belt buckles are like a whole thing too. Where did I see one before? You got a belt buckle? Some of them are special. And then you can roll. What's it got on it? It could be like a wolf or a sloth or an axe. It's like belt buckles even have their own little tables in this. There's a big page for exploring that, again, you know, this is like
Smart buckle talks. If you roll 4 on a special belt,
that's
buckle.
Right. Your belt can talk to you. It's probably got a real sassy mouth, that belt buckle. The exploration section is really just like a bunch of tables that you might find on a typical DM screen, where it's just like, you know, rules pertaining to light. Is your light going out? You can roll a d6 and maybe it'll go out. Is this book, door, or chest locked? Roll a d6. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. How far away is something? Roll the d6. It'll tell you. What about the weather? We got a d6 table for that too. There are a few not random tables here. Like if you want to hire some additional muscle or like a wizard or something like that, they got a table for the different types of hired help and how much they cost. And you can also roll up, of course, a random hireling with a random personality. Hey, you got your dice on you, Tom?
I mean, I have Google.
Roll a d8.
8, you say. Google. 8.
8. You have, you got a hireling here with 16 HP, 5 defense, and a talent for vulgar spells, and then roll d20.
Oh. 15,
and they have a very honest demeanor. They're honest about their vulgar spells. So even little table for like whipping up a hireling. When you level up after surviving your last adventure, it sounds like there's no real XP system. You survive an adventure, you level up. But also, as noted in the margin I see here, there are no actual levels in this game. Chill. So really all that happens is you survive an adventure, you pick 2 benefits from this list, and here are the 5 options. You take 2 hit points, you gain 1 spell, you gain 1 whiz, which we didn't really get into, but it has to do with the magic abilities. You gain 1 treasure, you gain 5 lucky rolls, and there's also the option here, you can sacrifice items of power, magical or not, on an altar to gain a fortune roll for the group, which is another d6 roll, and the outcome ranges from fire raining upon the land to all the PCs leveling up. So you get this have this additional option where you can trade in gear that you found that's powerful, but you're not using it, and you can risk getting something good or bad for the whole group, which is pretty cool. But if you rolled a 1 on fortune, fireballs rain down, goose die, all PCs take 66 damage. Woof. Goose will find out what you did and it will be ugly. So that sacrifice, while it can be great, you know, everybody leveling up is just because you got rid of that magic sword you're not using. That's pretty awesome. But the big risk, of course, is if you roll a 1, everybody's getting damaged, and there's like a huge consequence to the entire game world.
Goose will find out what.
And it will be ugly. It really will be. I just want to read this little thing here, another sidebar. Treasure, what a pain in the ass. You got treasure? Describe a flaw or drawback you must deal with. You gain 1 lucky roll per day. And examples are, this damn gun recoils. This mask sweats me. I have to thump the shit to make it work. GMs will use this against you, so make it fun. So this is just like adding in some extra flavor. And there's, of course, a giant, you know, several giant tables about treasure that you can find, frivolous junk, hard cash, gems, lots of strange items, I believe we, yeah.
Weird weapons.
Weird weapons.
Odd armor. We've done some of
these
already.
Super tech. After that section, then we're getting into, there's just some prefab NPCs here. Like the wizard Foz.
I think they would qualify as pre-gen characters, actually.
Yeah, you could use them as pre-gen characters, too. I think you could use it either way. Yep. Like Butter Jam, who fights with a butterfly knife. Oh, and is a bard. Or Gobe, the living statue, who has a wrench, moonshine, and a chain shirt. Just like... some assorted, there's a winemaker. Yakard Roll is a winemaker with goggles and a sword and a book of strange true stories. So just NPCs, prefab characters, take your pick, inspiration. And then we start getting into, haha, surprise, more tables, just more places to go and things to do. Starting with Goozer City, we talked about it last time, which is like the big metropolis. And there's everything you could want there. Descriptors of structures, names of streets, methods of vertical mobility, like types of stairs, common foods and beverages you can find, common encounters, things you might just discover when meandering around or wandering down Ennui Avenue. Smells of the city. Oh, Tom, you gotta roll the d20. Let's find out what Goozer City smells like today.
Oh, boy. Wherever we are, it's a 2.
It's a 2 spice. Well, that's good. If you'd rolled a 3, it would have been pee.
Oh, God.
metal, wood, grain, garlic, beer, chemicals, shit, bread, and meat. All options on here. Here's a small assortment of Goozer City Goos, just like, you know, people you might meet. Enforcers, Bravos, Alley Wizards, Commoners. And I like this little illustration of the Commoner. He's like a yellow bartender, and he says, closing time, Goozer, pay your tab.
I like the description says, most Goos are boring base and quite uninterested in adventure. You are not most Goos.
Damn straight. Methods of travel, getting around. There's a table you can roll on to get yourself a wyvern or a rickshaw or a donkey, or hey, there's even a rowboat on here. Different rules of the street, which are basically the things that you might get hassled over by the cops. Things like blasphemy, assault, murder, breaking and entering, lewdness. I'm surprised lewdness is on there. It seems like a pretty lewd world. Random tables for street vendors, for breath weapons. There are call buttons for the enforcers.
Candy.
Pretty wild. And then there's this awesome poster of the world of Gozer, which you and I were remarking on before we started recording. Just love this awesome art. Goozer City right in the middle. Ghost dunes, the palace, the mountains, the sun, river running through.
Silent
looks,
city.
Looks great. And you like these little figures who are looming over the map on either side, especially the guy on the left who's some sort of horned creature. He's got no nose.
Yeah, he like doesn't look like they don't look like Goos at all, really. I don't know if they're supposed to be Goos or not.
He's just going, it's pretty great. And then even more like helpful stuff for your GM, tables of encounters that are based around the different spots, like Goozer City, the palace, the ghost dunes, just like roll yourself some encounters. The Silent City reminds me of, I was just talking about this the other night, but Skeleton Jelly, right? You know Skeleton Jelly?
No, what is Skeleton Jelly?
You don't know Skeleton Jelly? Oh my God, Tom. So Skeleton Jelly, for context, is a series of short comics that were part of this like indie comic zine called Multiforce. And now I gotta send you one of these because first off, I think you'll really like this. They're rendered in that sort of sketchy pen art style, and they are the adventures of a skeleton named Skeleton Jelly. All Skeleton Jelly does is say, I am Skeleton Jelly, as he wanders through the endless corridors of the ruined ultraviolet city.
Huh. I mean, weird. Cool, I guess.
You will like these. I'll send you links to all of them, because they're pretty great.
Why does the Silent City remind you of that?
Oh, well, the Silent City, and just once you watch Skeleton Jelly, you will see that the denizens of the ruined ultraviolet city are all very Gozer-like. Like, they're all strange creatures with, and Skeleton Jelly wanders through, I don't know, and also just the ruined ultraviolet city has a, it sounds like a location that would turn up on this map.
I will say, on the map, there's a point pointing off to Ochzul,
the Dead City.
The Dead City, and that doesn't have an encounter table, and I want to know more about that.
Yeah, geez. I haven't found anything about it yet, but you know, that's because of the one thing that I was complaining about last time, which is, while I absolutely love the presentation of this, it is impossible to easily find something. You can't just flip through and find, like, the heading of what you're looking for. It's always buried in some margin or some table or something. So maybe I'll find information on the Dead City, but I don't know what the deal is. Recent events of some gravity. Initially, I thought this was just like a timeline of Gozer history, but no, it's yet another table where, as a group, you roll one or two events and then figure out how to respond to them. And this is all sorts of stuff. Like, there's a blight crops wither in black dust. A nearby tower glows faintly red at night. Maybe that tower is causing the blight. Or, a returning god, a naked god awakens. Flowers bloom in footsteps. Where are the pretty people, it asks. Why do the ugly ones yet live? So these events of some gravity have a real range of possibilities and severities. A baby boom. 1,000 gooselings are born in one night. In distance, creaking wings. Ancient hungry devil. So a devil's coming to eat the 1,000 gooselings, or maybe the 1,000 gooselings are a portent of the arrival of the devil. A lot of potential here for creating, you know, even just full campaign plots out of that stuff. And then there's the adventure machine, which we rolled on last time, which is just like one page, several tables, where you follow the chart, the numbers, you know, 1 through 9, roll on those tables, and it'll tell you the seed of the adventure, the enemy, the places involved, things involved, complications, NPCs, quests, monsters, and treasure. Like, it can give it all to you right there. There's a whole page dedicated to rolling up towers, everything from how tall to, like, trappings and everything. The angry sun spits wrath upon the earth. Goose struggles survive, scraping and stealing each day, looking to the sky for signs of deliverance. And then this is all like, what is the sun's mood today? Sometimes the sun seems to have its own moods, and it can be angry, rain fire down, woe to all. Or maybe it can be vampiric, and people get drained of whiz when they're out in it. There are cults and zealots that believe they know the answers, and here's a big table of cult proclivities. The sun children can stare at the sun and not go blind. The beaters of the drum make drum circles. The blue breath, they inhale the mists. Magic is another thing that is like sort of like the D&D light. It's all these spell lists, and
I think it's kind of like in form with its classic leanings that like there's such a huge section devoted just to wizardry.
Yeah, for sure. And one thing that I found interesting about this was that there are different kinds of magic that have like a ranking in terms of power and what beats what. There's vulgar magic, wizardly magic, and true magic. So they are just like, they really just refer to these different types of magic. There's a list of vulgar spells here, which seem sort of lower level, almost like cantrips. And then wizardly magic, and then true magic. Wizardly magic beats vulgar magic. Nothing beats true magic. So there you go. And the distinction seems to be that if you cast vulgar magic, you roll on a fumbles table, potentially, if it doesn't succeed, and you can get some bad stuff that happens, like stench surrounding you. Wizards can also undo, counter, or reverse most vulgar spells with a magic roll. Wizardly magic is pretty easy to come by, because if you say you're a wizard, then you are. You can cast spells and wizard tricks on a good magic roll. And then true magic is the absolute magic of deep time and space that cannot be countered, undone, or resisted. Goo's lore holds that screwing with it is what killed the pretty ones and pissed off the sun in the first place. And yeah, you know, some laws of true magic, rules to do with wizardry and spells. There's so much stuff here that, much like D&D, I don't feel like I should even attempt to cover all of it. Learning spells. You want to find a teacher, pay and learn, or translate, which costs whiz points in days. You roll versus your own magic, or you copy it into your own script to safeguard. Others are unlucky at reading. D100 spells. Here's more spells. Wizard objects. My God, it just goes. There's so much of this. Wizard death is always weird. There's a table where if your wizard dies, you roll on this table. Tom, roll a D20. How does your wizard die?
Oh, man. My wizard's got slain. It's a one.
Oh, your wizard becomes an oracle. That's cool. So your wizard doesn't necessarily die. Maybe your wizard just goes into sort of a dormant state and becomes an oracle to be visited. There is, of course, a big table on familiars. Wizard, do you have a familiar? It will be a helper and companion. You can see what it sees, abuse it or not, abuse it not, or bad luck will haunt you. And then it's into like the monster manual part. Creatures, creatures, creatures. So many creatures, prefab creatures, random tables for generating creatures, random tables for generating the threat of those creatures. Looking through these, I mean, as I've said previously, the art is the real selling point of this game for me, because the art is...
We're talking about creatures. I want to focus in on this.
I was going to say Harog-Zul.
It's a scary figure. Man, this looks like some sort of scary boss monster. Has super intellect, psionic power, magic power, levitating chair. I mean... Yeah, he has 1d6 guards of these like beefy dudes, the Nuds. Then he knows 1d4 wizard spells. He will barter for treasure plus secrets plus delicious goose babies.
The levitating chair and the look of this thing really make me think of like MODOK from Marvel.
Yeah, and I just happen to know from looking ahead that the Nuds are sort of beefy looking
with talon feet. I like the Ikmuk, which is looks like just kind of a sad swamp hag that hides in the muck,
feeds on misery.
Rakadon, which is like a big dinosaur that can carry like buildings, small towers on their back. Wizards often build small towers on them. It's pretty sweet. There's a whole section here on robots.
Whole page just for robots generating all your robots.
I like that assassin bot. That's an awesome little drawing of the assassin bot coming in with his gun. You know, I don't think I remarked on this last time, but the art style here, you know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of Mad Magazine. It's like the figures, the fact that none of the lines are like straight. They're all obviously drawn like totally freehand. Got a bit of a Mad Magazine vibe off these. There's a big page on the Skyworm, the scary threat from the sky that will speak in tongues and whip you with its tail. Tyrant lizards, vector snakes, and zards. And that's it. You know, close out with the monster manual. And then there's the index.
I just wish we got to know what... my two big mysteries here is what's with the Dead City, Ox-Zul or whatever... And also, who are those guys on the left of the map with the beady little eyes and the horns and the...
And looking at this index, I don't see any indication of what the Dead City is. They got the entry on Goozer City here, but I think it's up to you, Tom, to make up what happens in the Dead City. And I guess...
Maybe it's full of those guys.
I guess the last thing to mention is at the very, very back, even after the index, there is an optional rule for the true weirdos, which is usage dice. Stop tracking every bullet. This
is one of the first things we ever talked about.
That's right. Gozer. A callback is usage dice. And I guess you can just go back and listen to that, but it's a clever optional rule. Stop tracking every bullet. Oh, man, and then the final page are just like these little character portraits you could use for your own character. Love them. So I think that covers, like...
Just a bunch of goose.
That covers all of Gozer by J.V. West. And I gotta say, like, I don't know. I'm sure the game is fun. Seems pretty straightforward. A lot of I wouldn't say it's meaty. It's like a whole lot of bones that you could stick tons of meat onto. It's like a big skeleton that you could apply a lot of meat to. But
I feel like it would be like a real adventure to get through. Though this is one thing that I think about is like, I think such an important part of it would be making sure that everybody got to see how good this art
was. Yeah, for sure.
Like, you would have to, like, I don't know. Like, if I were running this with my friends at a table, I'm not sure how I would present it. Like, because I can have all the wild tables and stuff and, like, describe all the stuff. But, like, I would want so badly, I'd constantly be like, guys, check this out. Guys, it looks like this.
Yeah,
oh my God,
this is the kind of thing, like, if I was to run a game of Gozer on Roll20, I would just exclusively use art from this book so that everything, you know, I'd use the big map of the world. I'd make little tokens out of all of the different creatures. I would strongly suggest, I wouldn't force, but I would strongly suggest my players use things like those character portraits at the end of the book, because the style is just such a selling point here, and definitely my favorite thing about this game. But yeah, like I love how this looks. The source book is a very cool product. It comes with a poster book, which are all the splash page art, and I want a bunch of prints. I want those Gozer prints on my wall, man. But yeah, I mean, I think this is a lot of fun, and I guess the last thing I will say is something I said last time, which is I still think that this could really work as like a solo journaling RPG. Just the sheer number of random elements that you can roll up, I think that you could just do this on your own if you really wanted.
Yeah, but I think it would also be, again, like a real adventure to play with some friends.
Oh, for sure.
So, if you want to get in touch with us, see when we post new episodes, or follow us, check us out on Comparing Campaign on Facebook. And if you want to... Oh, I remember what I was going to say. My God.
Let's have it.
I feel like this game does for me what people expect Mork Borg to do for me. Like,
fair, yeah.
There's something about this game that even though it's like not that mechanically new, there seems to be... There's just enough, like, I don't know. I was going to say actually meat to it. Like, if you use the whole meat of this game, there's a decent number of, like, encounters and world there that you can, like, explore. And so, like, I think it is a pretty juicy, meaty game.
I mean, we're sort of splitting hairs on the definition of meat here. The reason I said it doesn't have a lot of meat is because it leaves a lot up to you to fill in. Like you said, there's like all these locations on the map, especially the Dead City. It doesn't really explain what their deal is. It's got some random encounters, but you don't have a big profile on what goes on in the palace. So it leaves a lot for you to fill in.
Well, the palace is a sprawling ruin. And then it's got all these things in it. You can just do all those encounters. Like, man, you have all these locations and all these encounters. If you ran all of them, that's a fair bit of meat if you use the whole meat.
Yeah, but they're all just random. Where's the story? That's the real meat, in my opinion.
I guess that's what you make up, but, like, I don't know. The thing is, that's the part that I'm always going to make up anyway, you know? Like, that's the part for me that is like Drail and Empok rather than...
No, but Tom, you use lots of modules as the basis for your ideas. There's no modules in Gozer.
The stuff that I use out of the modules is the stuff...
Is the random
like
tables.
The kind of stuff that I would take out of Gozer. Yeah, it's like, because when there's a random table of like encounters in one of those modules, I just run every encounter. That's the whole meat.
All right. I get where you're coming from. We're really just defining meat on different terms.
I know, it's a hilarious moment that we've just had on the podcast.
Just realizing
the intense meat conversation.
Getting intense about that meat.
All right, well, I gotta go pretty soon. So if you want to get in touch with us, follow us, or see when we post new episodes, check us out on Comparing Campaign on Facebook. And if you want to see our show notes and supplemental materials, or hopefully we'll be sharing at least a link to Gozer,
yeah,
because you'll be able to see lots of cool stuff there. We highly recommend it. It's fantastic. I really thank McGill for the Christmas present. But if you want to see all that stuff, check us out on comparingcampaign.wordpress.com. I haven't posted like from my notebook on there in a while.
And yeah, it has been a while. Maybe we'll get some of that up there.
I don't know. We'll see. I guess maybe the thing is it's that I filled out that whole book and now I don't touch it so much anymore. But anyways, all that to say, use the whole meat. Don't steal because it's haunted.
Level up. Pick
Not
two
me.
Options from this list.
Oh, yeah.
Pick two
cool.
dings.